It's time for Senior Talk with Carol Higgins Taylor, a show designed with seniors in mind. Carol discusses everything from Social Security to senior housing, medication to Medicare, and so much more. And now, your award-winning host, Carol Higgins Taylor.
Hi, and thank you for joining me today for this edition of Senior Talk. We're going to be discussing volunteerism, what it is, what it isn't, and who it's good for. The person who's doing the volunteering, the community members that benefit from that, and the organizations who really need those volunteers. It's a three-prong approach for really making everyone happy. My guests are Mary Alice Crofton. She's the Executive Director of the Maine Commission for Community Service. Mary Alice has been the Executive Director since 1996. In her role, she supports the volunteers who serve as commissioners, serves as liaison to external partners. She does strategic planning, program development, external communications, intergovernmental relations, and representing the Commission on regional and national initiatives. I also have my good friend Maria Staples here. She's been on before. She's the program manager of one of my favorite programs ever, the Foster Grandparent Program. But she also is a commissioner now. She's recently been appointed commissioner for the Maine Commission for Community Services. And the commissioners are a diverse bipartisan group of citizens that are actively engaged in community service, and they represent every region of the state, and each one represents at least one facet of the community volunteer service sector. So now Maria is on there doing good things all around for the state, as she always has. Thank you both so much for being here. This is a great pleasure for me. Always a pleasure, Maria, and it's nice to have you here. I'm Mary Alice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So the Maine Commission for Community Service, Mary Alice, explain to me and my listeners what this organization is and does.
Sure, we're happy to do that, or I am. So first of all, the commission is a governmental entity. It's part of the state of Maine government. It is the only part of the government that, it's the only entity that has as its primary focus the strength and well-being and capacity of the volunteer sector across the state. And we work with, well, as you said, there are 25 members of the board. They're all volunteers, which for a lot of state boards and commissions to serve on a volunteer basis is a bit unusual. And every, as you mentioned too, every one of them comes from a different part of the volunteer world around the state, because you do find volunteering in local government, you find it in the nonprofit, you find it in county government, find it in state government, you find it informally in the neighboring sector. We make a distinction between the formal volunteering, which is allows folks to come and go in an effort in the community, like Meals on Wheels or Foster Grandparents or the library or somewhere like that. So people can move through that system, and it's got some structure to it. But there's this whole other segment of neighboring, which also is voluntary and tends to be built off relationships with the person next door, or the person next door knows somebody who needs a certain kind of assistance. And that goes on sort of for as long as the need is there for a particular person and is done through an informal network.
I didn't know anything about that piece. Is that kind of an official volunteering capacity, or is it just a neighbor who's going over to help out?
So when the commission starts talking about what's the data around that tells us how are things going in the volunteer world in the state, what issues are challenging it, which are allowing it to flourish, there are two components. And so the neighboring one is measured by asking folks, are you volunteering to assist? And somebody's like, I pile the wood for my neighbor who can't do that anymore, or we've organized among the neighborhood an informal provide a meal to some family where there's been someone is ill, or there's been some sort of tragedy, or the family's adjusting, or somebody's new to the neighborhood, or a new parent, or, you know, so it's sort of that word of mouth small community sort of thing that goes on. And it's measured because that's a sign of our connectedness with each other, which is really critical, because that's also an indicator of, if something happened in the community, would we know each other well enough to be able to come together and solve and respond to whatever that issue is? So part of what the commission's doing is we look at data, as well as doing training for organizations that want to have volunteers engaged in their work, or want to expand the way volunteers are involved in their work. And we also do training for people who have come into a position, and then they discover under that little line, all of their duties as assigned, that they're responsible for a cadre of volunteers who are engaged as even citizen scientists, going out and figuring out, you know, is there red tide in the clam flats yet? Or is there a particular kind of species in the lake that shouldn't be there, or whatever? So we do some training for those folks who find themselves in charge of volunteers. And how do you do that? Because employment's such a different psychologically situation. And we're also spend half our time with grant making for the national service programs, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Sure. So as part of the data collection, is part of the reason you do that so that if the volunteers, for whatever reason, went away, that you would see where the holes are in the community and in the service sector?
So we're relying at the moment on some national data that doesn't have a wonderful profile of Maine. We're hoping to be able to find some financial partners to be able to do a really good look at Maine, because when that's done nationally by the Census Bureau, they do a really thin, you know, we're a rural state. That's not where they concentrate.
Yeah.
So, but we can still look and see some of what's happening. We would like to be able to look more closely and see whether it is whether the changes that we suspect, rural versus what we would call urban, even though other people don't, is there backup for some of the anecdotal reports that we get around what's happening with that, and also to be able to look at. Volunteering is just one of a set of indicators around civic health and the ability of communities to come together, problem solve, function, carry things out for each other, and so that we could respond to those in a way that is informed by data. I mean, a lot of people turn, you know, like roll their eyes when somebody in government says data, but, you know, your gut is sometimes limited by who you heard from recently.
Yes, it's not really scientific. But Maria, you must, being the foster grandparent director, manager, coordinator, all things foster grandparent, you must really see what would happen if that program either went away or all your volunteers quit or something happened. Hundreds of children and a number of schools, there's so much impact if you didn't have those volunteers. What would that be like?
Absolutely. I mean, we hear that on a daily basis from the sites and from the volunteers. This is truly an intergenerational program that helps the volunteers, gives them a reason to get up and to keep going. And from the teacher's perspective, really makes an impact with the children that the volunteers are serving. And I think if it went away, a lot of seniors really wouldn't have as much to look forward to. And we find that it is what keeps so many of them going. And then, as Mary Alice mentioned, so much of our work is also about data. And we do impact assessments mid-year and at the end of the year. And we can show the difference that the volunteers are making. We can show that elementary school children demonstrate an improvement in a number of areas, including academic performance and self-esteem. We can show that preschool and daycare children demonstrate an improvement in school readiness and self-confidence, and English as second language students become more comfortable with the language, and youth who are disabled or developmentally delayed increase their communication and language skills. And I also think, as Mary Alice mentioned, many of us are doing a lot of work in the community, and the data may not be collected. We may not realize it. When I was fortunate enough to be asked to be a commissioner, and it was quite the lengthy process and the paperwork that I had to submit, and it wanted to know, well, what are you doing in your community besides your work? that you're paid for. And I had to think about it. And then I realized, wait a minute, you know, I'm bringing a meal to a neighbor. I'm checking on a neighbor. I'm picking up mail. I'm, you know, volunteering for a food drive, stuff that we maybe don't think about, but that we're doing.
It's fascinating to me how a lot of times we talk about what volunteering does for the person who's volunteering, sense of purpose, getting up, being needed. And oftentimes we don't really talk about the impact that they actually have on the organization that they work for and how many programs might go away if volunteers weren't there, which means how many people are not served, not getting help if the programs were to go away. We're almost out of time, but when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the specifics of the Maine Commission and some of the programs that you have. Foster Grandparent, AmeriCorps Vista, Senior Companions, RSVP, all of that. Stay with us. We'll be right back right after this. Much more to come on the Maine Commission for Community Service and a way that you can get involved as well. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk. So what does volunteerism really mean in the community, whether it's the Senior Companions, RSVP, Foster Grandparents, or the other things that you do when a volunteer goes into a place?
So one of the things to think about is that volunteers are a way of extending the reach of a lot of different organizations in the community and helping them to carry out their work, their mission-related work. There's a certain number of employees, you know, that the money will cover, but that almost never touches the actual need that's out there. So the importance of volunteering is, number one, for people who are residents of the community to help meet the needs in their community, regardless of what age they are. Those who've got some work experience, have got some skills, have got some time. You don't have to have all the time in the world. To be involved in something that either fits with their current lifestyle. So, for instance, if they're moving towards retirement but they haven't got a ton of time, picking something that will be easy to fit, or somebody who's got a different set of skills, it means going to that organization and saying, here's what I know how to do, or here's what I want to learn, or here's a skill set I haven't been able to exercise in a while. You know, is this going to be a fit for the things that you need to do in your operation? On the organization side, there's an obligation as well to be clear about and to have done some planning, not just wing it when the volunteers come through. First of all, and everybody needs to understand and be comfortable about this, that there is no obligation on the part of an organization to say, of course, come volunteer with us just because you came through the door and said, I want to be your volunteer. The organization needs to be clear about what their needs are, what skills they need somebody to come with, and which ones they can train somebody to, how much supervision they can provide somebody, because you don't want to set somebody up to stumble or fail as a volunteer because you don't have the time to support them and you don't have the means to train them up. So there's this negotiation that goes on, and they, as they look at you as a volunteer, may say, some other day you've got a set of skills that could really use, but we're not prepared for you right now. And you know, you don't want to spend that time and get a sour feeling or sour taste in your mouth because they weren't ready. It's better for you to go find somebody who's ready for you right now.
Do you think organizations may feel bad if somebody wants to volunteer for them, they'll just take them no matter what, even though it's not a good fit?
It's absolutely still a huge part of our culture that if somebody says, I want to volunteer, that you're obligated to accept them. And folks really need to get over that on both sides of the table, because it's not a personal statement about you. If somebody says, thank you very much for the offer, but we can't really use you, that's not any statement about the organization or about you. It's about the fit, the time, the place, the slice in time sort of thing.
What should someone think about if they're listening and they're like, I think I want to get out there and do something? What should they really think about themselves first? with regards to what they can do, what they want to do, the time commitment? Sure. How much inner reflection should they do?
I think the best place for somebody to start is to take a look at what is it that I want to get from this experience, because staying as a volunteer is all about feeding your inner self. So do you want to learn something? Is that why you want to go do it? Do you want to make a contribution and what you get back isn't that important? That's a really broad one, and you're going to have to narrow that for folks in order to. But if you want to learn, you can focus on that. If you're very aware of what your skills are, maybe ones that you used in the job, maybe ones that you've developed in a hobby, maybe things that you haven't used for a while that you want to get refreshed and updated, whatever it is. And in a sense, develop a resume that you can share with folks to say, it doesn't have to be formal, but be able to at least recite or put on the volunteer application, these are the things I know how to do. Maybe they're not evident. This is where in my church, in some other setting, I've developed leadership skills that you can't see from what I've done for work, whatever that might be. Then the second thing you want to do is you want to realistically look at if you are still employed or you've got to work part-time in order to supplement whatever income you've got, where is this going to fit easily in? Because after we get over the honeymoon of being excited and meeting everybody and being jazzed about what this new thing is, and it drops back and you've got to work it into your regular routine, where is it going to fit easily? And so I'm a good example. I started out volunteering at the hospital. I was like, all right, I've got this ton of vacation time. I'm going to take a couple of hours every Thursday afternoon late in the day, and I'm going to start my volunteer. Well, that didn't work out. Other people controlled my Thursdays. So Sundays are mine. So I can do that on Sunday. And it's not a big deal to be able to do it.
That's a great story and very poignant for someone to really think about what they're looking for if they decide to start volunteering somewhere. We'll be right back right after this. If you'd like to hear this show again, log on to WVOMFM.com and listen to it in podcast form. Stay with us. There's much more to come. We're back with Senior Talk. So, Maria, when we left you, we were talking about somebody really thinking about what they want to get out of and what they want to do and what they can offer. Is it ever too late for someone to start volunteering?
Well, I don't believe that it ever is too late. I mean, we have volunteers who've been doing this for over 20 years, one that we both love very dearly.
My mother.
That's right. So, and you also know the process that we go through at PENQUIST. So it is quite the intake process to be a PENQUIST foster grandparent. They do an application and they kind of do a small resume for us, and we do pre-interview questions, and then we meet with them for a couple of hours to just really be sure, because it is a big commitment, as Mary Alice said, and you have to know what you're going in for, and the schools come to depend on it so much that we want to make sure that somebody is really on board with that. And as you know, we do a rigorous background check, so we've done that a couple of times on volunteers when we had the opportunity to recheck all of our volunteers to make sure that everything was on board, and it was, but we took that opportunity to do that. So to be a foster grandparent, it's not a quick process to get in, but as you know, once they're in, oftentimes they're there for over 20 years. People will retire in the schools and the volunteers will still be showing up for their 15 to 36 hours a week.
It's really an amazing thing, and my mother is 91 and loves it. And I'll tell you a quick story. She used to be at Job Corps, and she helped the students get CNAs and that kind of thing. And one of her neighbors was in the hospital, and she went to visit her. And a CNA came in and said, "Grammy Higgins, thank you so much for all the help you gave me. You really helped me graduate." And my mother just started crying because it made a huge difference to her and the impact that she had on that young woman's life.
Yeah, and we hear that all around the state. So PENQUIST administers this program in 14 of Maine's 16 counties, and that's what we're hearing. Just the difference that they're making in the classroom, in Job Corps, in libraries, in correctional facilities. I mean, we've had them up in facilities where there are youth offenders, and just making a difference, letting those kids know that somebody still cares. Anybody can make a mistake, but anybody can right themselves and get on the right path again.
That's really a great point. So if you're 85 or 90 and you're thinking, I'm too old to volunteer, you're not too old to volunteer. It's really all about what you have to give, or what you want to give, or what you want to get back.
Absolutely.
Senior Service Corps, Mary Ellis, tell me about some of the opportunities that are available, the programs that you...
Sure. I'm going to talk specifically about the National Senior Service, the Senior Corps programs, because those are the ones that are part of the family that the commission oversees or pulls together. And so the ones that we directly fund are the AmeriCorps programs. And then we provide the training and technical assistance and assist with public awareness and recruiting for the Senior Corps programs. So if you think about these as the civilian side of national service, there's military national service, there's some other versions, and then there are these three that are funded by Congress in Senior Corps. So you've got the Retired Senior Volunteer Program, where folks pick how many hours a week they want to do, nonprofits and government, local government can say, this is the project we need carried out. You've got the Senior Companion Programs, which go out and support folks who are trying to live independently and stay in their own homes, but need some extra support, or the caregivers might need a break, some respite sort of situation. You've got Foster Grandparents, which really focuses on youth and young people and supporting their development so that they can become healthy, self-sufficient adults. And so in that collection, the AmeriCorps programs have three. Senior Corps got three. There's some other opportunities. As the main commission for community service, we're the state government partner for the federal agency that funds these programs, that brings them into the community one way or another.
What are the benefits you see from organizations and from anecdotally seniors that you have? What would their lives be like if they didn't take their time and volunteer?
So what we know is that volunteering is not only about community engagement, but there are mental health benefits, there are physical health benefits. It keeps people grounded in, you know, sort of time and awareness, interactions, keeping track of, keeping some of that mental sharpness that we all jokingly say we're losing, but it's right. Really, it's really about we've overfilled things, you know.
So quickly, there's the music, but if someone was really interested in this great topic in volunteering, where would they go?
VolunteerMaine.org.
VolunteerMaine.org. You heard it here first. Maria Staples, Mary Alice Crofton, thank you so much for being here. VolunteerMaine.org. Get out there, do something fun. You won't regret it. That's it for me. This is Senior Talk. Thanks so much, good guys, for being here.
Thank you, Carol.
It's a great show.